Good morning, Jefferson.
Morning, Jefferson.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi, Chi. We have sufficient members to start, Chi. We're just still waiting for people to make this to join, but we do have sufficient to start.
Okay. Good morning again, honorable members. Good morning to the leadership of the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, led by Mr. Sabir Khan and the team. Today we'll be receiving a presentation from the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition on the support for transformation and black industrialists. But we want to first start with the internal matters. So honorable Smart has indicated to the department that we'll first start with the internal matters. As I know Honorable Mushodi has indicated that she will have to attend to her mother who is not well. So what we're going to do, we're going to first flight the report that we could not adopt last week. And then we're going to go down the report, what then we'll do after that, we then ask Mr. Samara Ali to just advise us on the procedure to be followed in terms of Rule 155. But let me first start with the apologies. You've already indicated, Ms. Mati, that we have sufficient numbers. If you can just indicate if there are any apologies, and also those who are present.
Okay, thanks, Chi. In terms of apologies, we have two standing apologies from Mr. Lansman and Ms. Mazagula. And then in terms of members present, we've got yourself, Mr. Moimang, Ms. Mashuri, Ms. Mamalhana, Mr. Dango, Ms. Boshoff. I just spoke to Mr. Bradford now. You said he's in the meeting, but I don't know if I missed him because I don't seem to see him here.
I'm in the meeting. I'm listening to you speak right now.
Oh, sorry. I just don't see your name. Okay.
Okay. And welcome, Honorable Professor.
Technology from KZN.
Okay. I think there's also an indication from the staff that one of our staff members has been booked off. It's Grace Dinizul. While she was doing some cleaning at the house, she then fell. I think she had to go to see the doctor yesterday, and she has now been booked off. We wish her speedy recovery. Can we then, Matia, maybe I don't you or Enrico, if you can flight the report on employment and labor. I think there was a mistake in the notice. It was saying tourism. It should be employment and labor. If you can go down, just scroll down until the last page, but slowly, not so fast. Thank you very much for writing the report and telling us through. Before we adopt the report, I will at this stage request Ms. Samara Ali to just indicate to us the procedure that we need to follow in terms of the rules. Over to you, Samara.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Chair, in terms of the way we're going to vote when it comes to this report, we will do so in accordance with Section 65 of the Constitution, in that each province will have a vote and a supporting vote of five provinces will carry the report. I do understand that there was a concern that these are votes and schedules that form part of a Section 75 bill. However, the committee should note that we're not voting on the bill as yet. We're merely voting on the report of the committee. Hence, it is important that we will follow procedure and vote in terms of provincial votes rather than individual votes. In terms of our rules as well, Chair, it has been amended substantially. This requirement is further lamented in Rule 103, which further indicates that we will vote in terms of as dictated per the provisions of our rules. And the new rule that dictates this is Rule 114, which deals with quorums and decisions of the House. Sorry, Chair, I see there's a hand by Honorable Boshoff.
Honourable Boshoff.
Chair, thank you. I'm just waiting for her to finish and then I will ask my question.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. You can continue, Samara.
Thank you, ma'am. And in terms of Rule 114, it basically reads a committee may proceed with its business irrespective of the number of delegates present, which does not affect us at this point. The subsection 2 of Rule 114 states that a question is decided by a supporting vote of five provinces. So in order for us to have this report passed, Chair, we would need the support of five provinces. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You can come in, Honourable Boshoff.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to everybody. Chair, I'd just like to inquire, when will we have a copy of these new rules, please? It is imperative that we have them because we still have the old rules, and I know that new rules have been drawn up, et cetera, but I haven't seen a copy to that effect. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think there was a, I don't know whether it's called it a workshop for members that it was circulated, but then it was indicated that those members who would like to have hard copies can make arrangement. Otherwise, they were circulated electronically because we're all taken through those in one plenary session. We're taken through the. You can correct me, Samara. That's my understanding that we're taken through. I remember then it was said that members would like to have hard copies can make arrangement. Samara?
Thank you, Chair. I can inquire as to when the hard copies will be available for members. However, I do have the most recent updated version that I can email if honourable members would like.
Yes, I think so. Maybe if you can do that, you can email them to
Chair,
members.
Chair, my hand's up again if I may come in. All right, that will be good because I recall that, but I did not receive an electronic copy. It could be that it was sent to our parliamentary emails, which we do not use.
Yes.
If Shamira can send it to us ASAP and try and determine when we will get our hard copies.
Okay. Maybe what you can also do, Samara, if you can send also to Madia, because she knows the alternative address of members. You can also send to those who are not using the parliamentary email.
Noted, Chair. I'll email that off now.
Thank you so much. Can we then go back to the report? And honourable members, it has been explained to us how we then take decision, how on when we adopt a report. Honourable Lord, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, Chair, I just want to confirm how many provinces are represented. I'm not talking about how many members or how many provinces are currently represented.
I think is it seven? Can you just confirm again, Ms. Mati?
I believe it's eight provinces, Chair.
Eight provinces. Okay, so we need five provinces to take a decision.
Can I just confirm which is those eight provinces and the members?
Start with yours, Western Cape, KZN, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Gauteng, and the Free State.
And Northern Cape, Chair.
Sorry. Northern Cape. I thought I've mentioned Northern Cape, yes. So there are eight. So yeah, the province that is not represented is which one?
Northwest,
because the Honourable Landsman has a standing apology. And so that answers you, Honourable Lund. Can we then go to and vote? I will ask those who are voting in favor if they can raise their hand on the platform. But if your device is unable to do so, you can indicate. Ms. Mandia, you can just help us with the...
Okay, in terms of members who are voting in favour, we've got yourself, Mr. Moimang, from the Northern Cape, Ms. Mamirahana from Limpopo, Ms. Mashuri from Free State, and Mr. Dangle from Gauteng. So we've got five provinces in support of the report.
Okay. Can we ask those who are voting in favour to lower their hands, please? Can we have those who are voting against the adoption of the report to please raise their hands?
Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
If I may come in, the DA will be abstaining on this. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I see there's one hand that is voting against from Honourable Apleni. Thank you so much. That therefore means that the report has been adopted. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. The next item then will be the minutes of the... my understanding, Ms. Matia, you can correct me, is that the only minutes that we have are those of last week.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Can you scroll down there? Thank you very much. Are there any corrections, honorable members, or are there any omissions? Are the minutes reflecting the true reflection of the deliberation of the meeting of last week, the 7th of May, of June, sorry. If there are no corrections or omissions, can I have a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. Honorable Mushodi, I move for adoption of the minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mushodi. Honorable Moima.
Thank you, Chair. I formally rise to second the move to adopt the report, to adopt the minutes as a true reflection of what transpired. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Honorable Dango. Dango's senses down. Okay, so the minutes have been adopted. The honorable members, I don't know if there is anyone who's against the adoption. Seems like not. So the minutes have been adopted. At this stage, I will now hand over to Mr. Khan, who is leading the delegation of the DTIC to make opening remarks, and then he will indicate as to who will then be taking us through the report. Mr. Khan, over to you. I will give you the department 1 hour to take us through the report, and thereafter we allow members to ask questions. Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Khan.
Greetings, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Select Committee, the staff of the Select Committee, colleagues from the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, the Industrial Development Corporation, as well as the National Empowerment Fund. Chair, the delegation this morning is quite broad, and with your permission, Chair, I would quickly introduce them. Within the department, we have Ms. Malebo Mabiche-Thompson, who would be making the presentation from the department side. We have Mr. Mautu Malofane, who is from the spatial unit. Ms. Susan Maholia, who is from the industrial financing unit. Mr. Tommy Klassen, also from our spatial unit. Mr. Takalani Tambani from our spatial and economic transformation unit. We have also Ms. Lindiwe Mavunla.
Recording
well
in progress.
Ms. Varsha Harinat. Chair, in the delegation this morning, we also do have Ms. Busi Mabuza, who is the chairperson of the Industrial Development Corporation. And Chair, with your permission, Chair, I'd kindly request Ms. Mabuza to introduce the colleagues from the IDC. Chair, if I can maybe quickly invite Ms. Mabuza on the platform to introduce the colleagues from IDC.
Yes, I can do so. Ms. Mabuza, can you please take the floor?
Chair, thank you so much. My name is Busi Mabuza, as the DG has already indicated. Chair, we have a fairly sizable delegation from our side. So I'm not passing the buck, Chair, but I will request that our Chief Operations Officer, Ms. Joanne Bate, introduces the rest of our colleagues who have joined us this morning. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Chair. COO.
Thank you so much. I am Joanne Bates, the Chief Operations Officer of the IDC. And joining us today is David Jarvis, who is our executive responsible for corporate affairs and strategy. We have Tsepo Ramadibe, who is our head of corporate affairs. We have Gerald Tinonetsa, who is the manager in the CEO's office. And we have Zandile, who is the manager in my office. I'm just looking to see if I see, I think she has joined. And then Christo Fansale, apologies, I didn't complete this. That's Zandile Puyani, who is the manager of my office. And Christo Fansale, who is a manager within the strategy unit. And I think that is the full delegation from the IDC today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Back to you, Mr. Khan.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, from the National Empowerment Fund, we do have Mr. Mzi Dayamani. If I can kindly request Mr. Dayamani to quickly introduce the NEF colleagues.
Thank you very much, Acting DG, and good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Mzi Dayamani. I'm the General Counsel at the NEF. I am with two other colleagues from the NEF, Mr. Andile Stimela, who's the manager of our Strategic Projects Fund, as well as Ms. Nokutula Fakude, who's the manager of our Socioeconomic Development Unit. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dayamani.
Chairperson, with that introduction, Chair, if I could just make a few introductory remarks, and then I will hand over to Ms. Malebo Mabitsha-Thompson. Chair, as you and the members will recall, on the 4th of November 2015, Cabinet approved the Black Industrialist Policy, which aligned with the then Industrial Policy Action Plan. The scheme was officially launched in February 2016. And the purpose of the Black Industrialist Policy was to leverage the state's capacity to unlock the industrial potential that exists within Black-owned and managed businesses that operate within the South African economy through deliberate, targeted, and well-defined financial and non-financial interventions. The policy sought to achieve the following objectives, the first one being accelerate the quantitative and qualitative increase and participation of Black industrialists in the national economy. The second one is create multiple and diverse pathways and instruments for Black industrialists to enter strategic and targeted industrial sectors and value chains. And the broader objective is aimed at promoting industrialization, sustainable economic growth, and transformation through the support of Black-owned entities in the manufacturing sector. Chair, the policy instruments was twofold, the first being the need for capital, and the department, through the partnership of the IDC as well as the NEF, provided syndicated funding from development finance institutions, such as the IDC, the NEF, the Land Bank, the PIC, as well as the department. And the second instrument focused on market access. And here, literally, the objective was to provide new markets for Black industrialists as they enter the economy. Chair, with those few remarks, I will then hand over to our very capable Ms. Malebo Mabitsha-Thompson, who is the Deputy Director General for Industrial Finance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khan. PDG, hello.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and good morning to all the members. Chair, I'll just ask if my colleague Basha could be given the right to help me with the presentation.
The Tulu fellow's got the...
Okay. Tulu, can you... Thank you, Solo. If we can just go straight to slide number 2. Thank you. Chair, based on the request of the honourable members, the committee, we were asked to give a sense of where we are in as far as our transformation work is concerned, and the interest was on the BI program, looking also at the spatial distribution of our initiatives, and then how some of these initiatives find themselves in our special economic zones. So we've tried to address the questions from the committee by structuring our presentation in this way. That first we will deal with issues around transformation and the funding that has taken place. And then we will share with the committee case studies that we industrialists that we have supported. And then we will deal with the question that the committee had asked, what are the challenges as the part of the concluding remarks of the presentation. If we can go to the next slide. So, Chair, just as a reminder, I'm sure the members of the committee are fully conversant with the mandate of the department. But as a reminder that the work of the department and the agencies that are present here is to support jobs, support growth, industrial dynamism and transformation, and that we use tools of industrial development, trade policy, competition measures, and broadening levels of empowerment and economic inclusion in order to achieve that mandate. So this presentation is going to focus on the issue of transformation as per what the committee has required. We will be highlighting Black industrialists, Black industrialists, particularly those that are mainly in the manufacturing sector, but we do want to note that in the case of the NEF, really, which is an institution that has a primary mandate to help Black business, that their projects in some instances will include property ventures. I'm saying this because we will be showing you numbers. So I'm trying to just contextualize the numbers that we will be sharing with the members. This work of collating all the interventions and the enterprises that we have supported is ongoing. As we're talking now, we are updating our next issue of a booklet of Black industrialists. Members will be aware that we had done that just over a year ago. So we are updating that, and that also will be shared with members as soon as it is public. The previous published document is on the DTIC website, and should the members not have that, we can make that available immediately. Thank you, Solo. So economic transformation, we always find that it is important that we emphasize the point that it's wider than the triple BEE policies, and it incorporates about three elements: transforming the structure of the economy so that the economy grows faster and that it is more inclusive. And that includes some of the work that our Competition Commission will do through the implementation of the competition policy, in part addressing the levels of concentration, because a concentrated economy really is an economy that tends to exclude a lot more people, because only a few hands are really in the driving seat in as far as productive capacity is concerned and various other economic activities. We want to shift dependence on export of raw materials. That's an important element of the transformation of our economy, and we're building a more balanced and a dynamic economy that also has a focus on value addition beyond just export of raw materials. Then another important part of transformation is making sure that we've got the broadest set of participants in the economy. And in our case, because of our history, the issue of promoting participation of Black South Africans becomes critical, and then of women and of young people in the economy, so that we can broaden the base of entrepreneurship and promote fairness, including using the BBBEE policy. So in the slide that follows, we just take the committee through the evolution of our empowerment trajectory as a country. These are not distinct steps. They are interrelated. It just highlights areas which tended to be a key focus at particular points in time. The first one was the issue of dealing with redress, to deal with history of exclusion and the legacy that it has left. Then the second phase was really laying a foundation for deeper growth through greater economic inclusion that widens the talent pool of enterprise drawn from Black South Africans, women, and young people. Again, there the focus is on the fact that the more talent we bring into the economy, the better it is for us to be able to have an economy that is not characterized by high inequalities. And that is why in the third phase now, we are focusing on how do we bring the levels of inequalities down. And it's a challenge that many countries face, but for us, it's even a binding constraint on our growth, because the more people are excluded out of the economy, really, the more in terms of markets, you have less markets than you would otherwise have, because you don't have clients. So if you don't have customers, then it doesn't make sense to produce. If it doesn't make sense to produce, then so it goes on as shrinking the ability of the economy to grow and the economy to have a much higher impact than it would be able to have both domestically and globally. So the issue of redress was the key concern. It still is the foundation for a deeper growth through integration of other population groups in as far as enterprise development and ownership of the economy is concerned, and now this issue of dealing with inequalities. So that in a way just tries to sketch out the overarching policy thrusts that we have set ourselves to deal with as we were thinking through the empowerment part, which is an important part of the work that we do. So in terms of the evolution of the policies, first it was individual share ownership, typically a non-controlling share within an existing business, which helped the process of capital accumulation in the hands of Black South Africans, and we know that that was an issue of great concern, in the sense that this was seen as narrow BEE policy. Then we went into the second. I see, until you're not moving to slide five, please. The second phase, which was a broad-based empowerment made up of communities where consortia of women, of youth, and collective investment and empowerment vehicles who had the key focus of broadening participation were also brought in. And this is a major part of what the broadening participation pillar of the new BBBEE Act wanted to put across, that beyond the individuals, how do we empower communities and bring them into the mainstream of the economy. Then the Black Industrialist policy also kicked in, where we were looking at Black talent in terms of entrepreneurship and seeing how that talent could be nurtured such that these enterprises become an important contributor to our economy, to the jobs that we need, and the export revenue that we also need. And the fourth expansion, which is what we are also focusing on now, is how do we bring the workers on board in order to develop an inclusive model that shifts from an adversarial approach on the shop floor, but brings in the workers not just as contributors of labor, but also participants in decision making and the greater benefit beyond salaries that comes with co-ownership of an enterprise. So in slide six, we share with the members some of the challenges that we faced as we sought to deliver on the transformation mandate, and some of the actions really from our counterparts in business that has made some of this work quite a challenge and difficult to undertake. Members are aware of fronting practices where companies would misrepresent either their position in as far as who's the true shareholders and beneficiaries, and they will falsely claim that there were Black South African shareholders and beneficiaries, even in instances where that wasn't the case. And there are cases where Black-owned firms would kind of use their names as the contractor in tender documents while the work is not being done by them. There are cases where individual persons would be put on a shareholder register, and those people wouldn't even know that they are on that shareholder register. And again, I mean, for us, that is just outright fraud. And all of this has required us in the DTIC and by extension the IBC and the NEF to tighten our regulations and control so that we make sure that as we support enterprises, if we are supporting them as Black industrialists, that those are real Black industrialists. I apologize for that mistake there. We're trying to communicate that we have tightened controls and made fronting a criminal offense. And again, as I had indicated, that the Department of its agencies, we've put main measures in place to address fronting. And what I will then do, I think in the interest of time, Chair has given us a few minutes, would be then to skip to slide nine. So, Chair, in this slide, again, we are just taking the committee through the broad scope of what we do in as far as transformation is concerned. The focus of today's discussion is on industrial financing, so I'll leave that, we'll deal with it just shortly. Then on competition settlements, ensuring that issues of BBBEE, supplier development funds, and localization are also taken on board when the settlements are reached. The issue of market access, that competition settlements do not lead to people being closed out, but rather it opens the door for new suppliers to also access markets. On the BEE codes and the charters, this is the work that we will do with various sectors to ensure that the sectors are open for new entrants to come in, and that those entrants are given an opportunity to also participate in the different sectors, like the financial sector charter, also in the legal arena as well. And then the EEIP, this is just the equity equivalent program, where for companies that are unable to give equity for whatever reason, we allow that they can do in-kind transformation activities that still allows us to achieve the transformation mandate. In our master plans, transformation is very important, because as I said, we don't see any tension between growing the economy and transforming the economy. We actually think that the two go very well together, that as we grow the economy and transform it in such a way that many people will be able to get value out of the economy, that helps actually propel the economy and grow much faster. And then on the SEZ and industrial parks, ensuring that these instruments also assist not just also transforming in as far as ownership of the companies that are in the industrial parks, but transforming the localities that these industrial parks and SEZs are located in, such that in areas where there was minimal economic activity, these instruments allow for that economic activity to start taking place. So we are seeing these as very catalytic instruments for geographic spread and spatial transformation of our economy. Then the work that we're doing also to support SMMEs, township, and in rural areas, and what we really enjoyed support, including from this committee on ensuring that the lever of the state in the form of procurement is used to bring many people into the economy, and to make sure that the money of government also stimulate jobs in various other sectors. And we've been at the forefront of calling for government to procure more and more from domestic manufacturers and service providers, such that the funds that government use to get its own services is also used as a strategic stimulus to the economy. Then I've indicated that for this presentation, the focus is really going to be on the Black industrialists. So with that, I will just perhaps ask Toho if we can just skip straight to slide number 12. So on the Black industrialist policy, initial transformation policies, as I had indicated previously, were mainly focused on enabling Black South Africans to obtain a non-controlling share in existing enterprises. This didn't sufficiently focus on new enterprise development, nor promote businesses controlled by a wider demographic of South Africans. And in 2015, Cabinet approved the Black Industrialist Policy, which was seeking to increase the level of participation of Black South Africans in ownership and control of productive enterprises in key sectors and value chains. The DTIC provides grants as far as our distribution of work is concerned, and those grants are directed at select productive sectors. The IDC and the NEF would provide loans, and again, I think we have to keep stressing that because they are loans, they have to be repaid, and those would also be directed at various sectors of the economy. And the loans, the mix of the loans and the monies that the DTIC provide in the form of grants are there to address what was a burning issue for Black industrialists, which was a challenge of obtaining funding from commercial banks. So amongst the DTIC in the department, IDC and the NEF, we're seeking to make sure that more and more funding is channeled into the industrial and the productive sectors of the economy, and also particularly to Black industrialists at a cost that allows them to grow and under conditions that allows their enterprises to thrive. But where you have a loan, you will have to repay it. This policy complements other empowerment programs, and it's not meant to replace any empowerment program. Now, going straight to the what we've achieved so far since the 2015 coming into effect of the Black Industrialist Policy, as was approved by Cabinet. What we are sharing with the members here is that as of now, and of course with these numbers, it's always a moving target, because enterprises come in for additional support, including as we're going through this presentation. And in some instances, some enterprises will exit for whatever reason. So 3.7 billion is currently in the range of what we are looking at in the form of approved funding, about 1,000 Black industrialists and Black-owned businesses that have been supported. And of those, the largest chunk of support has come from the IDC, and the deepest support from the DTIC, and then the broadest support coming from the NEF, as I've indicated, supporting entrepreneurs in various sectors of the economy, even beyond what we do largely really in manufacturing. And we are sharing with the members the quantums in terms of value of funds that we've been able to provide to Black industrialists throughout this period. Then in slide 13, we now look at the geographic spread of the support that has been provided, and those are the different provinces from which a number of projects were supported. And as you can see there, it's almost all the provinces in South Africa where we have supported industrialists throughout the country. In the slide that follows, we then are showing members by district, because this is members don't have an updated slide. There is a slide that does a district breakdown. I'll make sure that this slide is shared with the members. And what that slide shows is that in the different provinces, for example, in the northwest, that we've supported projects in Bujanala and Dr. Kenneth Kaunda, in Limpopo, it's in the Capricorn District Municipality, in Mopani District Municipality, in Bembe, in Waterberg, in Sekhukhune, in Mpumalanga, eHlanzeni, Gertsibande District, Nkangala District, we've also supported. In KZN, it's eThekwini Metropolitan Municipality, King Cetshwayo, Amajuba District, Ilembe, Ugu, Umgungundlovu, all of that just showing the spread of the projects that we have supported in Herigwala, in Zululand, going to the Eastern Cape in Buffalo City, Nelson Mandela Bay Metropolitan, OR Tambo District Municipality, Amatole District Municipality, Sarah Batman District Municipality in the Western Cape, the City of Cape Town, Overbeck and West Coast, in the Free State, in Mangaung, in Thabo Mofutsanyane, and in Fezile Dabe District in the Northern Cape, Francis Barth, John Daulo, Namakwa District, and then in Gauteng, Ekuruleni, Joburg, Johannesburg, Tshwane, Sidibeng, and the West Rand. So this slide, which we will also make available to the committee, just indicates that out of the 52 districts in South Africa, we actually have provided support to enterprises located in 40 of those. So we do need to get to the 52 districts. As per directive from the minister and in line with the district development model. So look, if you can just go back to slide, I think it will be 16. So the companies, the sectors that we have, or rather the different districts and those companies that are in those districts, fall by and large in the productive sectors of the economy, food production, clothing and textile, mining, metals, machinery and equipment, transport and logistic infrastructure, chemical products and healthcare, plastic products, the green economy, the creative industry, in property, construction and building materials, some instances in tourism, and there are those that are part of the fourth industrial revolution. The particular products will include food production from dairy, meat processing, poultry, growing fruits and veggies, packing and cold storage, import and export logistics, making sauces, farming, particularly fish, greens, fish and greens, soya crushing, animal feed, abattoirs, organic foods, gems, crocodile leather, I see we love gems, noodles, pet food, harvesting and selling of timber products, printing and packaging, pallets and also tissue products, clothing and manufacturing, including school uniforms, disposable and usable surgical masks and gowns, different textile products that some of the black industrialists are producing. So here we're just showing the broad range of products that are coming through from black industrialists. And members would recall that at the time when we started this program, one of the key criticisms was that you will not find black people in this sector. And what we are seeing now is that when policy allows people to take advantage of opportunities, use those policy levers in order to grow, a lot of talent does come through. And this is, I think, the biggest testimony of what the Black Industrialist Program has been able to do. Just unearth a talent that was there, because most of these businesses are not greenfield ventures by and large. Some of them are brownfield, where people were expanding enterprises that they owned, but they just did not have a way in which they could expand that in a sustainable manner because of some of the conditions that they were being provided, either lack of market access or conditions as far as financing is concerned that were just constricting in as far as growing their businesses was concerned. So these are the enterprises that have benefited from the support of the Black Industrialist Scheme. Turning to the work that we do on the special side, my colleague Maoto Mulisiani is here, is the acting DG in this area. In this work program, we are focusing on reforming the SEZ and industrial park model to include the township economy. And as I indicated, we are really seized with this focus on the districts. I've shown you that for the Black Industrialist Program, so far we are in 40 districts, and we are now working with provinces and local government to identify and support economic opportunities in all districts. Strong involvement of the DTIC in the planning, development and ownership of strategic initiatives, infusing of the district model in all the projects, strong involvement of private sector, including in infrastructure development, making sure that in some of our support programs, including the critical infrastructure program, we bring the private sector much closer to the work that we are doing on infrastructure development, and then mobilizing resources from all spheres of government to ensure maximum impact and support. So the new special industrial development approach, what it does is it provides now ability for us to be working in all this districts and localities, and in ensuring that there is spatial equity in the work that the DTIC does, mindful that there are many challenges in localities where industrial activity is naturally not taking place. So there's a lot of heavy lifting that we are now doing in collaboration with the provinces to see what needs to be changed. How do we use our instruments better? Can we use our equity equivalent program, just as an example, to get activity going on in the remaining 12 districts that at the moment are not showing up in as far as our Black industrialist support is concerned? How do we sharpen our tools to direct them more to those districts where there's very little economic activity taking place? So in this slide, Chair, we just sharing with you our current thinking and the current focus of the DTIC. We're sharing with you, I'm sure members are fully aware of all the SEZs that we have, and we also sharing with you some of the new SEZs that we are looking at. As I indicated, we're looking at a special development model that will see us financing our industrial parks differently. What we have seen is that where we go alone as the DTIC finance an industrial park for a legitimate reason that perhaps the local government there, the province may not be in a position to fund that park at that time, that we find that over time, those assets are not taken care of in the way that we would otherwise want them to be taken care of. That is why we are now turning and saying the provinces, the local government partners must also come on board, and various other issues that Maoto is more conversant with around even the governance of these industrial parks must also be improved as a condition for us to come in and provide support to the industrial parks. And we're saying that we need to use our programs also as part of responding to the work that this entire country has been thrust into of making sure that we are transitioning to a more climate-friendly economy. So greening of our SEZs, the digitization of SEZs and industrial parks, and review of the funding model, particularly for our SEZs. And where we have seen success in the work that we do on SEZs is not where there's been a beautiful business case for that SEZ, but really rather where there has been a credible anchor tenant in the SEZ. So our focus now, even on investment promotion, is to bring in anchor projects that will help make our SEZ and even our industrial parks a lot more sustainable. And those anchor projects, we call them anchor because they bring in SMME linkages both inside the parks and outside. And we are looking at inclusive models that will also take into account how we prioritize women and communities in those projects. And then the slide also shares with the members some of the up-and-coming, I'll call them industrial parks. You will see Ngomazi SEZ there. And as much as we are addressing spatial distribution of economic activity in our country, we are also now looking at how we can use these same programs to plug into what we want to achieve at a continental level. And then the Nkomasi SEZ, which is a logistics hub linking quite closely with Mozambique, and then the Musina Makado linking quite closely with Zimbabwe. Again, this is our focus in South Africa, that the way we interact with the continent is not just on the basis of us shipping all the goods that we produce here to the rest of the continent, but it is also creating avenues for the continent to give us inputs so that we can use those inputs in our own products. And therefore, you have a more sustainable trade base going forward. Chair, the slide that follows really just some of the case studies. Just not to make the presentation too long, we've had to cut down significantly on the number of case studies, and our commitment to the committee is that Black Industrialist publication that is now on the DTIC website will be made available to the committee, and in that way the committee will then have a full they'll have full sight of the projects that have been supported under the BI or rather Black Industrialist program. So here we've just we've selected very few, some projects coming from the IDC, the NEF, and the DTIC, highlighting the fact that there are those that would have received a grant and also a loan from our DFIs, and that these firms that are supported through this program, they've also been an important contributor to our GDP, and they are creating jobs. The loan constitutes the bulk of support that has been provided, as you could recall from the slide that I showed, where a large chunk of the support came from the IDC that would have been in the form of a loan. And in a market economy, not every firm will succeed. And we are quite mindful of that. And this one has nothing to do with color. there will be enterprises that will grow. There will be enterprises that will sail across the economy. Those that succeed, they are able to grow their businesses, and in this way, they help expand the economy. If I can maybe just take members, I'm mindful, Chair, that I actually just have about another 3 minutes before my hour is up from my clock. I hope I'm looking at it correctly. So I'll just quickly go into some of these enterprises to just share with you, give you a flavor really of what we are talking about here. VM Automotive, this one was supported by an IBC loan. They are operating from Roslyn here and also East London. It's very typical of what happens in the auto sector, and they created 72 jobs, and they haven't retained any jobs there because they are new, they are largely new in their enterprise. So they supply aluminium and steel blanks, and they do this to BMW. So you can see now the link between the work that we are doing in the autos industry, now allowing black industrialists to come in. On the next one is Afro Botanics, 100% black women owned. This one was supported by the NEF loan, and they are in Gauteng, and they produce natural hair and body care products. The next one, also in hair, they are in Harry Smith in the Free State. They were supported by the DTIC through a cost sharing grant, and what they produce is a hair, a synthetic hair, and we supported them with machinery and equipment. So South Hill is the next one. They are in the Northern Cape. They also benefited from NEF funding. And this one is a black-owned company that was established with the purpose of acquiring, renovating, and operating a four-star top-end boutique hotel, as I've indicated, in Upington. The next one is Escalon Trading. They benefited from an IDC loan. They are in KZN, and they are in the clothing, textile, leather, and footwear sector. And then Mutle Mining, NEF loan also there, 100% black-owned and managed enterprise, providing material handling, crushing, screening, and mine rehabilitation, drilling and blasting, as well as plant hire services. Then the next one is Pallet Direct. This one's in Gauteng. They've benefited through the IDC loan, and they were approved funding for plant and equipment and working capital. This was to enable the company to grow its customer base, employ more people, and increase its profitability. It's a family-owned business manufacturing high-quality pallets for food and the beverage industry. Then Unique Engineering, it's a 100% black-owned enterprise. They're operating in Gauteng and in the Northwest. Also benefited from NEF funding. The next one is Toronto Group in the Western Cape. This one benefited from a cost-sharing grant and an IDC loan, and they are working in the mining industry. I think. So they are producing activated carbon for farming purposes. Sorry for that. And then Newscon Flexibles, they are also in Gauteng. They have benefited from the DTIC cost sharing grant. This company, they are exporting goods to Eswatini, Malawi, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and the UK. And I do need to highlight to members that this is something we are seeing with some of the black industrialists, that they are doing very, very well in the export markets. And increasingly, a large portion of the support that we are offering is going to black industrialists, whose main market is actually the export market. And then there's Ocean Peaks, and Chair, I've run out of time, so I'll quickly just go to slide 37, and just to highlight some of the issues and observations that while we celebrate where we've been successful, there are issues that we are dealing with now, issues that requires us to work closely with other partners to overcome. Limited support to some of these enterprises from commercial banks, in part based on lack of business a track record and collateral. Issues of some of these companies, others having to go under or struggling because they've lost major customers and contracts. As I indicated, there are a number of those that are focusing on the export markets. So when COVID hit, and the whole global economy slowed down, there were those industrialists that were affected by it. We know of some of the black industrialists who died even through the pandemic, and this has now put the entire business venture really in a critical stage. And we're trying to work with the clients through that to see how we still salvage some of that economic activity. Limited market experience in some sectors, which results in over expansion or limited ability to respond to fast changing market conditions, or reliance on limited number of customers. Weak governance arrangements in companies, including in their own boards, that really opens them up to inability either to receive funding, or when they do have that funding, that perhaps the other players in the markets, when they look at that support structure, they are reluctant to get involved. And while we're raising this in the context of the Black Industrialist Program, members should just bear in mind that it's not necessarily something that is unique to these companies. Growing enterprises suffer from some of these things. I've spoken about the impact of COVID. BI organizations also have the inability to retain highly skilled personnel for a long time, due to the fact that they are competing in some instances with very large established enterprises who have deep pockets, and therefore they can just be able to offer packages that the enterprises are unable to compete with. So when servicing OEMs, these are original equipment manufacturers, BIs often must invest a lot of time, expertise and resources in trying to standardize and customize to these OEMs requirement. And sometimes in doing that, there's a lot of money involved, and when the deals don't come through, this puts the entire business proposition in jeopardy. And these are members, some of the challenges that these rapidly growing companies are facing, that between ourselves in the DTIC, within the IDC and the NEF, are working with these companies to try and see how we can assist them. And then in the next slide, I mean, as far as funding is concerned, this issue of access to capital, that it's still a big issue in the market, and it's something that requires a change really in business models, and those things are very difficult. Even when you confront the banks, they will tell you that no, we are willing to fund any enterprise as long as they can give us a tangible collateral and we can see from the financial history that we'll be able to get our money back. And that in itself then becomes a barrier for some of these enterprises to be able to access funding that allows them to take advantage of opportunities. We are here highlighting this in the context of young and female-owned enterprises, because these are some of the things that they are still faced with, which the various enterprises have to be working through. So the issues of capacity and skills, infrastructure constraints, the unconscious bias and risk aversion to youth and women, because these are new entrants in the market. So the establishment, so to say, does have a bias against new entrants, because they really don't know how to be dealing with new entrants. Informal enterprises resist formalization, a slow GDP growth rate, access to information, and pre-investment deal readiness, where there's a huge gap, particularly for new entrants, to attain proof of concept and commercialization funding, which is sufficiently patient to support their new enterprises. So, Chair, I apologize. I did take 10 more minutes of your time, and back to the team DG. Thank you very much, Chair and the members.
Khan.
Thank you, Malebo, and thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I think the Deputy Director General has articulated the report quite well. From my side, I think what I can indicate is that transformation is a continuous journey. And as a department, we emphasize it's much broader than BEE. And whilst we will see successes, there will still be challenges and hurdles, which we will continuously address as we roll out the program. Chair, with those few words, Chair, we can then conclude our report and take any questions or comments. Both the IDC and the NEF is also on the platform, and they are also able to take any questions in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Acting DG and DDG, Lebo Thompson. No, you were on time, DDG. Both of you started, I think Mr. Khan started at 10:18, so you finished on time. It's 11:19 now. At this stage, then I will invite honorable members to ask the questions. I see Honorable Lont, followed by Honorable Dango, Honorable Boshoff, in that order, please. And then Honorable Maima.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to start with a positive. And this is a criticism that I've raised in the past with entities and departments that come and present, is that they only highlight the positives and they don't flag what the problems are. So in that sense, I want to say well done and thank you that you did acknowledge where the problems are. That's not everybody that does that. And then also... Sorry, let me just another call coming in. So also what we now need to do is make sure that those problems are not raised again and again and again, because that's the one thing that we see with departments and entities, those that actually acknowledge it, or even after we pose the questions, it comes out, it's the same problems that appear year in and year out, and it doesn't really get addressed. One thing out of the problems that was raised that I want to flag is, how do you ensure that there is a continuation of a project or program when somebody passes on, like you said, during COVID? What is being put in place to ensure that it's not just linked to an individual, but that the idea and the project, because I assume that's how you approve it. You don't approve an individual. You approve the idea or the project that gets brought to you, and then make sure that there's a continuation plan should the individual that originally brought it to you, the money is not wasted and it doesn't fall away. The one thing that I am concerned about, and I must acknowledge this is to the researchers of the committee, I realized a lot of money, but I didn't realize it's almost 37 billion that went to the 1,000 black industrialists and black owned businesses over the past 7 years. And I'm concerned in how, because it's not, it's been shown that it is a small connected few that double dip and triple dip and quadruple dip into the funds that's available. And what measures are put in place to ensure that it is not the same people that just dip into the various funds and pots that's available, but that the power empowerment that's being done, it's truly broad based. And that is maybe something, Chair, that I want to propose, that we have that at a next meeting to say, listen, let's have a look and see how many individuals or how many companies that individuals have stakes in gets more than one support from various entities. Then let's just quickly see the last point that I've made here. And then I've seen it with the Saldana Economic Journal. They are now moving towards the green energy, but there's as if there's a disconnect within cabinet in itself. On the one hand, there's some that pushes that we move to green energy. And then on the other hand, there's those that regress and hold on to old energy supplies. And maybe if we can, and I also see, I think it was with the Swartland ECZ, I might be wrong now, but how do we ensure that all or most of our ECZs move in the same direction and speak from the same voice, and we don't have this push and pull internally? And then lastly, one thing that I just want to flag, it is the complaint that we don't get the foreign direct investments. That is 100% the fault of government. There is policy uncertainty, and it's been flagged time and time again, not just within the country, but outside the country as well. And until that policy certainty is given to international investors, we are not going to get the quantities we want. And that is something that must be put forward in front of the government's door, this department's door, and cannot just be raised as a problem, because it's a problem that can be fixed, and it can be fixed by the department and government. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lont. You will be followed by Honorable Dango. Honorable Dango.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation by the department. Chairperson, I have two questions. One is, should we, the department, not consider a policy position of trying to break the special apartheid divisions by targeting funds to bridge that and bring that into areas that can actually bring together the old apartheid situation and the cities on the other side? But in the middle is to look at that and have a policy position that can actually focus and say we will fund in those particular areas as a matter of preference. Two is, Chairperson, I'd like to know what the definition of community is, if they can tell me that. Three is, Chairperson, I want to ask a question that may be a bit awkward. If a company has applied for an IDC loan, that company goes into distress, another company buys that particular company over from the business practitioners. And there's a workers' trust there. The new company that takes over ignores the reality with IDC loans of the workers' trust. Should that not be looked at quite seriously, because it is an IDC loan to the first company, it's an IDC loan to the second company, and the workers' trust was not moved across when the second loan was granted. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Honorable Django. Honorable Osho.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Launt asked the one question, and I just want to reiterate it, that we ASAP see a report coming through to this committee on the $37 billion that has been made available, so that we can ensure that no double dipping has taken place. And then I would like to ask the presenter, for years and years and years now, we've been speaking about the Nkomazi SEZ. And I see once again, it's on the presentation that it's a logistic hub, fresh produce market. And then they speak of just transition focus. Now, we all know in September last year, the deputy minister and the premier of Mpumalanga went down to Nkomazi, and they were going to provide a report on where we stand. Up until this day today, we have not seen a report on that SEZ, because there is nothing to report on. We need to ensure that this SEZ is part and parcel of something that will be built in Mpumalanga, because we are on the N4, we are close to the Mozambican border, the Swaziland border, and it can mean so much to the people of Nkomazi, especially in the economic climate we find ourselves in, to be able to create jobs for those people. So I would like a report on where we stand with regard to this SEZ. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Poshoff. Honorable Mima.
Thank you. Thank you, President. Thank you, Chair. Let me take this opportunity to, first and foremost, appreciate the presentation as given by the DTI. The first one, Chair, relates to the slide that speaks to not all plain sailing challenges. I think it's bullet point that deals with the inability of the black industrialist to retain skilled personnel, but of more of interest to me is the next bullet point that speaks to when servicing original equipment manufacturers, black industrialists often must invest a lot of time, expertise, and resources into standardization and customization, as well as quality assurance, without any guarantee of continuous business from the OEM. I just want to check as to whether, having observed at this point, what is it that the department has done to help mitigate this area, because it is a concern. And I think linked to this point relates to the previous presentation that we received from the department for the same program. And in that presentation, a reference was made around Kele mining as one of the examples that was raised. I'm worried that it is nowhere to be seen. I hope the fact that it's missing doesn't mean the fact that it is off the department table in terms of this company being one of the Black Industrialist Program. Now, this is the second one, Chair, is mainly about an affirmation that is raised around challenges that are faced by Black-owned enterprise, which is mainly lack of access to finance, difficulties integrating into existing value chains, and lack of access to inputs and limited access to key routes. And I must appreciate the presentation because it put much more emphasis about this transformation, which you have correctly pointed out that at the center of it is to drive structural transformation and also to broaden the productive capacity of the Black entrepreneurs. And now, the question that I want to that I want to pose is related to this. The investment that one of your entities has made, let's say the IDC, whether it is in the renewable energy space, particularly around those companies that were identified in the phase one of the renewable energy procurement. Can we say with certainty that it is beginning to yield results? The reason why I'm posing this question is because I'm mindful of the fact that the IDC indeed in terms of those renewable energy companies, it has stakes, but one doesn't get a sense that they are connected to the grid. And in that situation, what is the impact of that in terms of the investment made by IDC? I'm specifically referring to those that are in the Northern Cape because I come from Northern Cape. Then the last one relates to at some point the IDC had applied for the, I think it was business rescue in one of the companies. I think it was Kalahari. What is the situation? Has the situation stabilized? Which necessitated the settlement by the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Chair. Honorable Maimang. Honorable Aplini.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm mostly covered by the previous speakers. But the question that I wanted to ask was with the issue of funding. As it has been mentioned that really so many companies were using the names of mostly Black people to front and get businesses. The question that I wanted to ask, what has been done about that? Because it is that the names of so many days, most of them recognize the people who have companies which they have never really have. So I wanted to know if is there anything which was done about those companies? But the second question that I had, that the mention of the mostly mentioned Gauteng and Cape Town, there is nothing about Eastern Cape that she has mentioned. There is no transformation that can take place without uplifting the people who are coming, mostly from the provinces that we know as mostly rural. So I wanted to know if she had some examples that she could mention around the Eastern Cape. I think those were the two questions, Chair, that I wanted to ask. Thank you.
Okay, no, thank you so much. I think they'll respond. They touch on both of your questions, but they will elaborate further. I don't know if there are any other questions from other members. I just want to start, if I may also ask, I've got also a number of questions, but I just want to start with this issue that was raised by Honorable Lont and Honorable Boshoff, because it's a question that keeps on coming up. I think the very first time the department came to present in the last term in 2016, I know I was not a member of this committee then, but happened to see the minutes, particularly from KMG. The very same question came up from Mr. Faber. If I can just read this part in the minutes, that what it says that the BIP, which is the Black Industrial Program, will serve to enrich a few possible politically connected people. Opportunities will allow a few people to become stinging rich, while the benefit to everyone else was unclear. So that was a question that was raised. And Ms. Mabije Thompson responded to this comment that the BIP on the issue that it might only benefit the few. She asserted that the DTI, or it was called the DTI then, had never predetermined who would apply for BIP support. Support was based on the types of activities the applicant was involved in, and more than the particular individual. I'm raising this because I would like the department, because Ms. Mabije Thompson was saying that this is a sample of case studies. What I want to request, so that we don't even have to wait for the next meeting on this particular issue, if they can send to the committee secretary all the people that have been assisted through this BIP, so that we can see whether these are political connected people, though we may not even know which political organizations, because some may assume that those people are members of higher up in the structures, maybe of the government party. So the best way, so that because this thing was raised in 2016, now it's 2022. If the department can just send us the list of all those that have benefited from this program. So that this whole issue is clarified once and for all. Just a question then from me again is that if you look at the policy, it talks about the cooperatives. I don't know if the list that I'm requesting you to send would also give us a clear picture as to how the cooperatives have benefited, because in the policy on Black Industrial policy, it also refers to the cooperatives. To what extent have they benefited as cooperatives? The other issue, which was also raised in the meeting, very first meeting, was a concern by members then of these 10 years. Which is a requirement in terms of experience. At the time, even if you look at the policy, there's no mention or even emphasis on the youth and women. But as you are reporting, DDG, you also focusing on women and the youth. But now, if you come up with the requirement of 10 years, already excluding the women and youth, because you've already indicated under your observations as well that women and the youth are new entrants, it goes therefore without saying that they may not have the 10 years experience that is required for them to get the support from the Black Industrial Program or scheme. The next question for me would be on the incentives, the DTI grant. I just want to know at what level is it kept? And because you're talking about also cost sharing, how much in terms of the percentage the beneficiary would have to contribute in terms of the said costs. The IDC and NEF, I would like to know the interest rate that the beneficiaries should pay, and also perhaps the time period of payment. I just want to check as to also whether it will not be possible to, because the issue of black businesses is the mandate of NEF. It wouldn't be possible that the grant that the TIC is giving to the beneficiaries shouldn't it form part of the blended finance of the NEF as part of the transfer from the department to NEF, so that it forms a part of the blended finance. NEF gives the loan, but also on the other hand, give the grant in the form of the co-sharing grant. I'm not sure if in terms of PFMA, IDC is allowed to transfer funds to another entity, even if it is within the DTIC family. But if it was the case, I would say that perhaps the allocation that IDC gives to the beneficiaries could also go to NEF so that it's part of one pot. Because I also maybe don't know whether a person can get this grant from the DTIC, and also a loan from IDC and another loan from the NEF, but also the other incentives that are on page 15 or slide 15 of the program that talks to the other pipeline of empowerment, whether people can have access to those incentives, if you can clarify for us as well. We also like to find out in terms of the time frame with regard to this review on the financing model of the SEZ and the industrial park. The other issue I want clarity on is whether there are any challenges that in terms of the applications. Because I know that there are some people that would come to the chair of this committee complain that the application have been rejected by the department, I would put it that way, and I would, particularly the IDC. There was one case that I referred to the PLO that I think she dealt it with the person concerned, together with the CEO of the IDC. So what are the general challenges around the issues of application? Why are some of them being rejected? With regard to the sectors, I know in the policy they are listed and they are in line with the industrial policy action plan. But also it is indicated in the policy that from time to time those will be reviewed in line with the priorities of government. Just want to find out if so far since 2015, has there been any review of the sectors? I'm raising this because when Ms. Mara B.J. Thompson was highlighting to us the I think if I'm not mistaken on the page 16, the sectors of focus. There are some of the sectors that I couldn't find that were listed originally in the policy, the blue ocean economy, including vessel building and repair. I didn't see that in the list he was reading from. Like she was saying that GEM has been indicated twice in the report. It's like they like GEM and at DTRC. And yeah, and then the other one is the mineral beneficiation. I don't see it in the list. The aerospace. I don't see it in the list. So I don't know if there are no black industrialists in that, and also in rail and the industrial infrastructure. So I just wanted the explanation if there has been any review with regard to the sectors and also the reason why those are no longer appearing as they appear in the policy. The next issue will be the failure rate since 2015, if you have figures or percentage of failure rate in terms of those that benefited, but unfortunately they could not sustain their businesses for whatever reason. Perhaps if you can also indicate the reason why they fail, if there are any failures. It would be nice if there are no failures. But also in the policy, there's indication that at the time, only 3% of blacks participate in the JSE. I don't know if perhaps you could update us now in 2022 as a result of the Black Industrial Program. What percentage of black participation now in the JSE? The next issue is the assistance, and as part of those that are in the case study, the South Shield, say in the report, you say they are in the area that is white dominated. If you can just give us an indication as to whether they are succeeding operating in that area, given that we still suffer from the legacy of apartheid, some people would not perhaps want to support black-owned enterprises. It's a fact. If you can just update us on that. And also on the issue of the master plans, the percentage of in all the master plans, the percentage of the black industrialists participating in that. I know you indicated that the automotive sector has a fund that has been established to assist the black industrialists in terms of transformation. I don't know if other sector master plans have similar arrangements. But also with regard to the Africa continental free trade areas, the opportunities, if perhaps you could have listed in terms of the case studies, those that are making inroads. I know previously there were a few that were mentioned that are taking opportunities in terms of the Africa continental free trade areas, those who are exporting wine to Ghana, bricks, train shoes, elsewhere, and so forth and so forth. I think Kulabok, as well. So if you could also update us in terms of, because those were very few in terms of taking the opportunities that are provided by the program. Given that this idea, even though it was the first the idea that came from the former president Zuma, but then the responsibility was given to DTI then, and then there was a, in terms of the understanding, there was a national broad-based black empowerment, economic empowerment summit. Just want to find out if since then, has there been any other summit of the national broad-based black economic empowerment to review the policy framework and see whether there is any progress with regard to the program itself or the scheme. I know that the program is mainly focusing on the manufacturing in particular, but I just want to know what perhaps a role would you play with regard to making sure that there's also black participation in commercial banks. How would you support? Because you find that almost all the banks, except I don't know if it's at some stage you get some challenges, the African Bank, I don't know if you was able to recover. But my question would be, what is it that the DTIC is doing to ensure that also in the bank industry or sector, there is a participation of black people in the commercial banks? Thank you very much, acting DG Kat, over to you in terms of the responses to the questions.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Person, before that, you've just provoked another question from me by your question. Okay. At one time in about, I think, 1996-1997, there was a Community Reinvestment Act proposal put on the table, which was withdrawn after the banks given certain undertakings to deal with community reinvestment. However, my own view is that they have not lived up to those undertakings. And should we not dust off the Community Reinvestment Act once again and bring it to the table? It's not a revolutionary act. It was used in the U.S. extensively, and Obama was one of the beneficiaries through that, through the South Shore Bank. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tambo. Mr. Carr.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and to the members for those questions. Chair, I'm going to start with a answering a few. I will hand over to Ms. Malebo Mapiche-Thompson. Chair, as you would have noted, in 2016 when the program was launched, she was one of the architects for the program. Chair, I've also noted that there were some questions directed to the IDC as well as the NEF, and I also kindly request that they be also be given an opportunity to respond to them. Chair, if you allow me, Chair, I would like to start off, Chair, with around some of the, I think, the question around 2016, some of the concerns that were raised then. And really, I think that question is really aimed at what were the policy objectives at the time. And I think when the program was launched in...
Can you please help us with your video, please?
Apologies, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Chair, so in 2016, I think some of the concerns which were raised then, as a department and as officials who work within the department, our key objective was once the policy was adopted and approved by Cabinet, it was really to ensure that implementation was sound and implementation was free of any corruption. And really the instruments which we utilized to implement the program really was really to ensure the success of it. And as we've indicated in 2016, I think at that point it was really to open up to announce the framework, but really to open up a new program that really allowed many Black South Africans to participate. What we can indicate, Jay, is that since 2016, right up to now, I mean, the department, just on the governance side, we had a number of audits done on the program, including internally from the internal audits, as well as the Auditor General. And we can really report that, you know, that all the support that has left the department has really went towards real Black industrials, towards the real economy that supported many of these companies. So the risks emanating around double dipping, around ensuring that we really supported core businesses was really to ensure that the governance processes as well as the systems really address those. A key part of the program was that when we introduced the program, we wanted to ensure that all the DFIs were part of the program, which included those within the DTIC family, but including the DBSA as well as the PIC. And this was to ensure that as we support the program and the industrialists within the program, it was to ensure that we provide quite a blended support across the board, because we knew that if we approach it as a single department, there would not be sufficient funds to address it. So from a governance perspective, there is a single adjudication committee that comprises of DTIC, the IDC, the NEF, the PIC, the DBSA. So when it comes to risks such as double dipping and so forth, those are adequately addressed within that committee already, because they can already see that that companies do not request funding from DTIC and then go to IDC and the NEF. And what we try to do with the program, the reason why we structured the program in that way, was to ensure that there is a blended facility that provides funding for this. So the core part of the DTIC's work is really to ensure that our grants that we provide actually lowers the cost of capital once there is other facilities that are brought on board by both the IDC and the NEF. And really the final facility that's provided includes loans, it includes grants, and it also includes any equity that may be taken from the IDC or the NEF. Chair, there was a question around a continuous trend, I think Honorable Launt indicated, and around whether there's a continuation plan for projects. And the key thing, what we've done with this thing is that because there is a loan element as part of the facility, it's always important that those loans are repaid as we support projects. And in order to ensure that they are repaid, a stringent due diligence is applied across all applications to ensure that monies will be repaid. So both the IDC as well as the NEF have quite stringent and robust credit committees that looks at all applications to ensure that number one is that the business plan is sound, but also that the loan that are provided will be repaid. Chair, there's just one more question that I'm going to address, and then I'm going to hand over to Malebo, who is really the architect for the program within the department. And Chair, it's the question around policy certainty to investors. And Chair, here, once again, we do have a team within the department. In fact, we do have a program called InvestSA, who deals with investors on a daily basis. And there are a number of impediments faced by investors that enter the country. And really, InvestSA's job and role is to ensure that any policy impediments, any process impediments, are really dealt with quite decisively by the team. And this InvestSA really, their core mandate is to really support investments across the board. So if you look at the way we managed to really drive the presidential 1.2 trillion target, I think within a period of 4 years, we achieved 95% of that target. So it gives an indication that that really some of the policy impediments, some of the structural impediments have been adequately addressed directly with investors in this regard. The other point to note with regard to this is that there's a number of international investors who opposed the department to participate in a program called the Equity Equivalent Program. And Malebo has actually articulated it and framed it quite well. And here, literally, it's because they are unable to give up equity, they agree to participate in the program. And through this program, there are real benefits which these multinationals provide to local supply chains, but also to allow black suppliers to enter the supply chains of these global companies. So those are some of the broad sort of the broad areas, Chair, which I really wanted to respond to. But Chair, with your permission, if I can maybe invite Malebo to the platform, and then we can then invite the IDC and then the NEF through you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Over to you. Thank you.
Chair, I'll just deal with some of the remaining questions. So maybe just to add a bit of emphasis on the concern, which is a concern that we always think of when we are evaluating projects. What happens when the key person, for one reason or another, exits or departs from the program? And it's an important consideration that we put in when we do assessment of the project. So there's this thing called team and risk that we would look at to see whether some of the projects would continue or not. But then I think in the reality of it is that when that person does exit, especially in unforeseen circumstances and unfortunate circumstances such as a death, it does put the project at risk. And the work that we then do is to work with those that are remaining in the project to see how it can be taken forward. So I thought I'll just also address that. Honorable Dango asks about the communities and how we are now defining that. And I think Honorable Dango knows that this is a trick question, and we're looking at in each project what that would mean, because what we are not tempted to do is just look at a group of uninterested persons, so that facilitates somebody who purports to be a leader to then say, no, I'm a leader of this community, only to find that these are really uninterested persons, and this leader in themselves, they are fronting in as far as that activity is concerned. So the way that we've tended to deal with it is also to just look at who are these, the members of a community, if it's defined in terms of a geographic area, if it's defined in terms of a coalition of people within the activity, and just to see what their interest is and what are the governance structures that put these people together, so that what we don't do is that fronting individuals who are purporting to be selected and elected by communities when we know that none of that actually exists. And we've learned a lot from what has happened in the mining sector, and we are trying to see how those learnings we can take forward. So in a very fluid way, understanding who is the group and what are the governance structures within the group, and how do we ensure that through strengthening also the governance structures, any support that goes to this communities actually finds itself benefiting, and the people that it's supposed to benefit, not just vanishing, and as far as the community facilitators are concerned. And then when it comes to competition settlements, we're looking at that quite closely, that the settlements must ensure that the governance structures that allowed for transformation, they are respected, and they are not jeopardized. And IDC can talk specifically to the transaction that was raised where this was the case. But from our side, every time we look at even a major transaction where the minister would have an interest in engaging in that transaction, we ensure that from a transformation perspective, all the transformation arrangements, one, they are kept, and if there is a way to strengthen them, even through that major transaction, that we explore that to the fullest. And one of the things that we have done is introduce this thing of, where applicable, adding more suppliers when there's a merger to make sure that the supply base is strengthened, not shrunk by a major transaction. And then on the issue that was raised, Honorable Boshoff, I think for all the incentives now, going on to 7-8 years now, we've been issuing a list of all beneficiaries. I'm responding to the 36.7 billion. We issue a list of all beneficiaries, from what we do in the auto sector to the what we do in the film sector to the global business services sector and to Black industrialists, because we found it quite peculiar that it was only when we introduced the Black Industrialist Program that there was such a big interest in saying, let us release the list. And what we then did is just release the list of all beneficiaries, again, showing our commitment to be transparent and to remain accountable. You would see when you look at the Black industrialists, including those that are in the book that I mentioned in the DTIC, there's very few, if any, political connections. So that statement that was made in 2016, looking at the projection of the project, has really been the case, that this was never a political project in the sense that there was a predetermined list of people who are supposed to get this benefit. The people that I've shown you, just as case studies, will realize that they don't have any political linkages to anybody. These are entrepreneurial Black South Africans. And really, they shouldn't be treated with any suspicion because they are entrepreneurial and they are Black. But the list is there for the members, and the booklet is there. As we've indicated, we are updating the new one. We're hoping in a couple of months we should be able to release it. What we ordinarily like to do is link it very much to the audit process, so that when we update the book, the information that goes there is audited information that has been verified by the Auditor General.
Then Honorable Mwimang raised the, I'm skipping the Nkomasi SEZ issue. Honorable Boshoff, perhaps Maoto could come in to respond to that one and give particular details. So Honorable Mwimang raised the issue of the OEMs and the challenges and how we are dealing with that. I'll ask my colleagues, because one or two of these transactions were actually in the IDC, to respond to that issue. But every time you're dealing with a situation where you are the contract manufacturer, then the risk that you then face is that you have to equip your enterprise to what the main contractor is asking from yourself. So if anything goes wrong, for example, you're not meeting the standards and the transformation itself, the refitting of the company may become more expensive than even quoted for, then all of those things do put the enterprise at risk. But the IDC may perhaps speak to that. With the Gela Mining, we were not able to put everything on the presentation. So those that were dealt with at a particular time, we didn't necessarily bring them back to the committee. But from what I know, there are no issues there with the transaction, unless it's something that has transpired of recent. And then on the fronting part, we indicated that what we've done is strengthen our due diligence. So ordinarily, people will give us documents, including shareholding certificates, that show that they are black industrialists in their enterprises. What very well is to go and interview the black industrialist and seek audience just with the black industrialist. And through that exercise, you very quickly can see whether there is fronting and or there is no fronting. And in instances like that, where we detect that there is fronting, we immediately just turn down those applications, because they are not in line with the scheme that they've applied for, which is supposed to take forward or support enterprises that are black-owned, managed, and operated. So that's how we've been dealing with the issue of fronting. And then Honorable Apleni raised again the issue that there's nothing in the Eastern Cape, and there is a slide on the districts that I realized that in the pack that went to members, that slide wasn't included. From the BI side, we can confirm that as far as the Eastern Cape is concerned, we've supported companies in Buffalo City, Metropolitan Municipalities, Nelson Mandela Bay, O.R. Tambo District Municipality, Amatole, and Sarah Batman District Municipality. So we can just make sure that this slide also is forwarded to the members. The issue of whether cooperatives have benefited, the program is also open to cooperatives. But what we found is that most cooperatives have not applied. What we are looking at now is seeing, particularly around the threshold, whether there's anything we can do there. The threshold being that the project must be of a particular value. That anything we can do there in order to relook that threshold, so that we can support many more enterprises who may be slightly smaller than the enterprises that we are supporting now. The 10-year experience, we have implemented it, I would say, with a bit of finesse, because it doesn't necessarily say that you have to be 10 years in that particular enterprise, but you do have to show that you've got skill in the area that you are asking us to use taxpayers' money in support of your enterprise. So for example,
if you were a beautician and you want to fabrication, we need to understand that you understand what it takes to manage a metal fabrication enterprise. That's just a silly example, but to illustrate how we are implementing the 10 years. It's not necessarily the years that we would zoom into, but to see how much of the sector you know, how far you've been involved in activities in that sector. Again, this is it's part of our risk engine, so that we don't have a failure rate because we've supported people that they don't have the experience, they haven't been in the sectors. When there are Black people in those particular sectors who have experience, who could also have been supported. The cap, Honorable Chair, is 50 million. And then we go up to 50-50 with an enterprise, and that 50-50 is just dependent also on the level of Black ownership. Whether the monies can all be put into one institution or not, I think these are ongoing discussions that we can have. But what we've seen is that the diversity of institutions also allow us the opportunity to see where the different strengths lie in the DTIC family and harness those strengths a lot more than if we were just to rely on one entity to support all the enterprises. We have blended financing in the sense that for every enterprise that is supported, some of them will get support from the IDC and then grant support from the DTIC, support from the NEF, grant funding from the DTIC. There is no double dipping that we have found out, because we also do share our databases. So there's nobody who has a loan for the same thing sitting in the NEF, that same person has received the same monies sitting in the IDC, and then we as in the DTIC have funded them twice. It doesn't work. And the level of our due diligence is such that those kind of things will come to the fore quite quickly. And then a review of the sectors. I think this will be the last one that I will answer. We have had a Black Industrialist Roundtable, which was a dialogue of Minister Rob Davies at the time in 2018 with the sector. And one of the things that was raised in that dialogue was the issue of market access. Following that dialogue, we then got through our colleagues who are working on the SEZ and the broadening participation unit, a number of missions that we took our Black industrialists to abroad and even internally, allowing them to be given space to showcase their products so that we can assist them to secure markets. So there has been a dialogue. The dialogue has resulted in that. I know that our colleagues now from TISA have got it as their program that Black industrialists will also be exposed to export markets. And in as far as the sectors themselves are concerned, you won't necessarily see a direct match between what has been approved and what was in the policy, because in some areas, literally, we haven't received any applications for those type of activities. But we are putting it in the policy because those are areas where the economy is growing, and we are working with a number of associations to see how we can spark interest, particularly from Black industrialists, to also enter those areas. I think I'll stop here, Chair, and through the guidance of the acting DG, then hand over to my colleague Joanne from the IDC.
Thank you, DDG. Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair. The DDG has covered many of the questions, so I'll focus on the IDC-only questions, but just touch on the question of, because a comment was made about when IDC, a company goes into distress, a new company acquires. Unfortunately, many of those processes, the process is led by external attorneys if a company has gone into liquidation. Where possible, as the DDG said, we do try to, particularly where our funding is remaining in or where we are providing funding, we do look to ensure that the transformation objectives continue to be achieved. In instances where there is a liquidation and the IDC is being settled on a sale of security, it's sometimes very difficult to do that. But we do, in all instances, do what we can to ensure that the objectives in setting up the project and financing the project are, in fact, achieved. On the question of Kalahadi, it is correct that there is a business rescue process that is in front of the courts, and that is all that, by nature of the process, that's all I can really comment on at this time. I'd like to confirm that Kele Mining is still operating in the Northern Cape. They are looking at a number of new contracts or tendering for a number of new contracts with the mines in the area, and they are servicing our facilities, albeit partly considering the last 2 years of challenges, and particularly the recovery required for many companies in value chains from COVID. On the OEMs in the motor industry, it is one of the key risks within the motor industry for all companies operating. And that is where the DTIC support scheme, in order to attract the assemblers into the country, has been so key in building our motor industry over the last 10 years. What we have seen with the clients that have, the black industrialists that we have funded to support the expansion of, or the building of certain new lines, they have secured future business. They have received the strong technical support and in many instances financial support of the OEMs. And although the business models for many of these component manufacturers in the early stages of the contracts appear marginal, we do see very strong production capacity being built in this space, and do believe that the motor industry remains an important sector for black industrialists to participate, especially as we move into the world of new electric vehicles. So really looking at how we can support transformation within the sector and continue together with the DTIC and the government schemes to attract these OEMs into the future to ensure that the sector continues to grow and contribute significant employment, particularly within those three regions that it is present. On the Northern Cape renewable energy, all of the projects that we have funded that have been concluded are connected to the grid and fully operating. The Redstone concentrated solar plant has some delays in getting to financial close. They have broken ground and that project is now under construction. At this stage, we are not aware of any risks in the connection to the grid, but that will be closely monitored as a critical item on that project development project development program. And all of the operating entities or renewable energy plants in the Northern Cape are yielding dividends, both to the IDC as well as to the communities that were invested in them. On the cost of debt, the IDC, I always feel it's important to reinforce the fact that the IDC, unfortunately, is not a deposit-taking institution like the banks. So our cost of funding is immediately starting off at a higher rate because we borrow our money from the banks and international lenders. We also fund ourselves from the dividends that we receive from successful project investments over time. So our interest rate is prime linked,
It is risk-based pricing, so we do look at a risk-based return on the risk that we are taking. However, that risk return is reduced significantly by the development impact in the transaction. For development impact, we have a scorecard that looks at transformation, involvement of women, youth, Black industrialists, master plan contributions, localization, spatial development. So we look at the development impact to ensure that when we price our transactions, it's priced on a return of both development and financial returns. But it is important for us to remain self-sustaining, which is the core ambit of our mandate. And as a result, we do need to provide a level of commercial return. And I think that is all the questions that that related to the IDC. Thank you very much.
Chairperson and through you, DG. I'll touch maybe on a few issues that relate to the National Empowerment Fund. One of them is the issue of the NEF mandate, as well as the collaborations between the DGIC, IDC, and the NEF. So over the last 2 years, there's been increasing collaborations between the NEF, DGIC, and the IDC. And as a result, there have been a number of allocations that have indeed been made by the DTIC to the NEF to focus on specific programs. And particularly in order to cater for the needs of the smaller manufacturers, the DTIC and the NEF established what is known as the Black Business Manufacturing Fund. And that business focuses on transactions from quantums of around R1 million up to around R50 million, which is an area where historically there's not been a focus on. But now we are seeing a number of those industrialists emerging. And what this is doing, in addition to the bigger Black Industrialist Program, is that we are seeing a number of Black industrialists that are graduating from being SMEs to being big industrial players. One example I can mention is on the list that the DDG was presenting today, there's one transaction called Wasa Gases that is now funded by the IDC. That transaction started with the NEF, where the NEF provided it with seed capital, I think on two occasions of around R10 million. Now, it is at a stage where the IDC is funding because it is now a big player in its own right, and it's got contracts with multinationals like BP. So there is a collaboration that ensures that between the entities, there is closer working together to ensure that we cater for all the needs of the South African community. So, and there are also, I think, what the DGIC has started doing between NEF and IDC. There are regular working groups and steering committees where we engage and we look at areas where each of the organizations should be focusing on so that we streamline our processes to ensure that we reach everyone and we're able to provide the support to as many people as possible. And also on the issue of Black women and the youth, we have also established, also in partnership with the DTIC, the Women Empowerment Fund. And that fund focuses on Black women who are operating businesses in townships and in the rural areas. And we are seeing that there as well, it's helping us in terms of the reach to ensure that we're not only concentrating the support in the urban areas, and we're also reaching out to the other groups that traditionally did not have access. And then maybe on the issue of cooperatives, what we've been doing, because understanding that cooperatives, by their very nature, they start out as being small, and some of them are survivalists. So what the NEF has done, we've come up with a cooperative support program that actually, because what we've acknowledged is that for cooperatives, you have to support them with grants in the beginning, and then they can grow to become manufacturers as well. So we have provided, we are actually nurturing a group of cooperatives. We've got over 20 that we have supported over the last year,
and we are nurturing those because they are in the manufacturing space. But what we acknowledge is that there's going to be a lot of hand-holding, especially to ensure that they are compliant and they also get accredited, because a lot of those programs have got a stringent regulatory requirement. So we take them through the process, and in the next few years, we'll see them emerging and becoming big players as well. But that requires patience, it requires support, which is why we've got a non-financial program that ensures that we assist them. We don't just provide funding, we also provide them with mentorship and other support to ensure that they are also sustainable. The last issue is the issue of Southeast that operates in the white-dominated area. So our focus as an organization is ensuring that when we fund a business, we ensure that we support a business that will provide a quality service. A lot of the areas, the honorable members are correct, that the competition is stiff and sometimes they get rejected in those industries. But we see that if we ensure that the product that they produce and their service that they render is at the high quality, then they also start to develop their reputation in the market. But the key is to ensure that they've got the entry, so which is where the issue of capital becomes very important, to ensure that we support them financially and we provide them with non-financial support. And over time, they get accepted in those industries. It's not an easy process. They get a lot of rejection. But I think that's where government comes in when it comes to development, because we see, especially that one in South Hill, we can see that that particular enterprise is now competing head on with the white dominated businesses, which is what we want to see in the market. Thank you very much, Acting DG.
Thank you very much.
Chair, to you, Chair, if I can only very briefly invite Mr. Mautu Malofane to respond to the question on the Nkumazi SEZ, as well as, Chair, the question from yourself around the black participation in commercial banks, and maybe just for him to touch on the sector codes that we have in place to address some of those transformation areas. Mautu?
Thanks, DG, and thanks, Chair. Am I audible?
You are audible, yes.
Oh, thanks very much, because I'm in the office and the network is quite bad. I think let me just start off. I'm not so sure if Mr. Tambani or Mavundra are here, just to touch on the participation of black population in commercial banks. But I'll touch on the question raised by Honorable Boshoff concerning Nkumazi SEZ. I must say that after a long struggle, we've managed to get a breakthrough on the development of the Nkumazi SEZ. In terms of the institutional capacity, which is something that we have been struggling with for quite some time, as Honorable Boshoff will be aware of, we have managed to establish the company, as you know, with the board. We've managed to secure funding for infrastructure. We've also managed to secure one of the biggest investments, which is called DP World. They will be establishing a logistic hub. That's why we're saying it's focusing also on logistics. They are finalizing the EIAs, their own EIA. As you know, when we designate, we just do a generic EIA. But the DP World is now finalizing their own individual EIA. Once that is done, we do anticipate quite soon that the investment would be operationalized. When we engaged with them initially, the timelines was 6 months. Unfortunately, that could not happen because of the EIA. On the issue of the infrastructure development, as you know, our major hiccup was the issue of traffic engineering studies, which culminated from the conditions given by the SANRAL when we applied for the approval. indicated that we need to build a flyover bridge for the access to the SEZ. But unfortunately, we could not do that for obvious reasons, but obviously for us to do that, we need hefty budget, number one, but secondly, it's not necessary at this stage, given that there won't be much traffic because we are still at the development phase. So we have since agreed that we'll do a traffic engineering studies. We're currently doing that. We have appointed the service provider to do that through our own PMU at IDC. So that process will be completed quite soon. The other issue was in relation to the site clearing and erection of the boundary fencing, groundbreaking. That has been delayed by the issues that you all know about, the Treasury directive or the Constitutional Court issue. But now that there's clarity, we do hope that quite soon we'll be able to break ground insofar as the infrastructure. The meeting that Honorable Boshoff has spoken about that was supposed to have taken place last year, that did not take place, Honorable Chair. The Premier was not available, so it was rescheduled. DM has contacted the MSC, I think, last week. There is a scheduled meeting that will take place quite soon, and we did commit that we would extend the invite to Honorable Boshoff to participate as part of that meeting, so that we can also get her concern insofar as the how we can accelerate the development of the SEZ. Aslin, are you in? Maybe you can take that second question if she's not here. Maybe Tambani, with your permission, Chair.
I think she is connected. Oh.
I am connected, Chair, through you. The sector code that is for the financial sector, we have received a report on the ownership of black people in the sector, and the recent report was published and launched on the 10th of May this year, and the target there is 23 points. The sector is currently having about 15% of black people participating in the commercial banks, Chair. In terms of ownership, it's not only the commercial banks, we also have life offices, we have short-term insurance, as well as asset managers. So in that aspect, it's only the asset managers that are doing fairly well, but commercial banks gradually, going through to that target. But it's something that is worrisome and that needs more attention. And the financial sector is in the process of reviewing their sector codes, and those issues will be addressed in that fashion. Thank you, Chair.
And black participation at JSE? Oh, that question won't go to you.
The black participation, Chair, in the JSE, it's less than 1%. And the other issue is that some companies do not even register to be listed in the JSE. We do get reports from the BBB Commission, because the BBB Commission is the one that collates information coming from the JSE listed entities. And that report indicates that the level of black participation is very
low. We've lost you then. Are you still there?
Sorry, Chair. I was saying that. Yes, Chair, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. We lost you for some time.
Oh, sorry about that. I was saying that the level of participation of black people is less than 1%, Chair. And this is reflected in the BBB Commission report, the latest report, because the commission is the one that is responsible for collating information that comes from JSE-listed companies. The JSE listed companies have a responsibility to submit information on their BEE scorecards to the BBB Commission. And the recent report indicates that the percentage is less than 1%, Chair.
Thank you very much. It's even less than the 3% that was in the policy in 2015. Okay. DG?
If I may, if you may allow, Chair, I think your question around the opportunities under the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, Chair, I think we may have reported in one of our meetings that the negotiations are quite at an advanced stage. The rules of origin is close to 90% of the products that have been agreed to. South Africa through SACU have submitted its tariff offer on 90% of the 7,000 lines. So those are quite key developments in this area. In anticipation of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area being operational quite soon, Minister Patel launched the Black Exporters Network about 2 weeks ago, and it was really to identify key Black suppliers that could really take advantage of some of the opportunities that the Africa Continental Free Trade Area may provide. And these are some of the things which our program, which is the export program, will really look to drive going forward. Chair, I think from our side, I think, Chair, we may have answered all the questions. If not, Chair, we're happy to still take any further questions. But Chair, I think at this stage, we can include our responses. Thanks, Chair.
I think there was a question on the failure rate, if we have any information with regard to that. And the challenges of faced by those who are applying. Make mention of there's a certain Dr. Tekis who are referred to the PLO complaining about the rejection of his application. So, what kind of application get rejected, or what are the requirements that they don't meet? Then the other one was with regard to the review, what are the time frames with the review of the SEZ and the IP financing model? Yeah. But also what of concern, I hear what Ms. Bate was saying with regard to the interest rate that they charge. But if you look at the policy of the Black industrialists, if I can just read the one section that talk about the strong emphasis should be on the most favorable cost of financing terms and more favorable terms for repayment periods and lower collateral requirements. And it goes further, a funding solution should include a longer term of financing, a grace period allowance, lower interest rates, funding for working capital. So as you respond to this issue, if you can also touch with Ms. Malibu, if Mabiti Thompson, if you can also relate the responses to the police so that we don't deviate from the police. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Chair, I think on the failure rate, we're now looking at that across all incentives to see whether there's a big change. The general failure rate that we've seen, particularly pertaining to greenfield projects, is around 40%. Right now, our initial feel is that Black industrialists are seemingly doing a little bit better than that 40%, but we don't have definite figures yet. This is a study that we're going into now. We should be able to answer that definitively in a space of 3 to 4 months when that study
is completed. It's something that we look at because it is important for us to see how we sharpen our instruments. It's not just the failure rate itself, it's also the reasons for failure. And how do we bring those reasons for failure into the policy support so that we also assist companies as far as that is concerned. On the finalization of the SEZ funding model and the new model, I think Mauti may speak to it, but I know they are hard at work right now trying to finalize the initial drafts. And going very hard into September to see whether there can be anything by then that would be available for the public. But the thing that is important there is that this is not just about what is written on paper. It's the evolution taking place as we are implementing our programs. For example, we've already implemented the first thing, which is to say we need a tripartite agreement with local government and provinces before we go into an SEZ. That's already in action. So we are just going to be documenting it. And then also making sure that the DTI takes a DTICs take a stake into the SEZs. That's already in place. We are already putting in place the requirement for industrial parks, that we won't support any industrial parks if the owners in the form of the provinces and the locality where the industrial park is at in the form of local government don't come in and ensure that that industrial park is sustainable. So beyond what is written on paper, some of these things are actually materializing in practice so that we start seeing this project becoming more and more feasible. And then the issue of the anchor tenants as well, that you need an anchor tenant that will allow the industrial park, the SEZ, to be sustainable. And that anchor tenant must be a credible anchor tenant in terms of what their order book allows for, so that they can crowd in other suppliers. So I think Mauti can correct me on the timing there, but I think they are hard at work. And as I say, some of these things we are implementing them already as they are finalizing the document. Chair, I'm trying to quickly see there's two questions that you re-asked, which I apologize. I didn't have a chance to jot them down. You were too quick for me. If the Honourable Chair could please just repeat those two. It's got I think the no. Let me not be. It's the two that I didn't get, Chair.
I think one of them, I don't know if Ms. Bates is going to respond to that. I quoted the policy with regard to the issue of financing, including the issue of a lower interest rates, that it seems like you're deviating from the policy because your rates are even higher than the commercial bank rates. So that's one of the questions. You've responded to the one of the time frames with regard to the review of the funding model of the SEZs and the SEZ and the IP, industrial parks. You've also responded on the issue of the failure rate. I think you done. But the one that was, there were other two that you never responded to. One is whether you would convene the National Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Summit, which was the one that came, I mean, finalize the details around the policy framework, so that there is a review of the family, of the policy framework to see whether there are any gaps or perhaps there's progress or there are any gaps. I think, and then the other one was with regard to each of the sector master plans, the representation of the black industrialists. After then you've responded to those, then as you were indicating that I think Mwate will come in and follow then by Ms. Bate.
Thank you, Chair. I think on the summit, it is something that is being considered as we speak. But I'm not at liberty to make a big announcement. We'll leave that to the minister. But the important matter of ensuring that we are continuously subjecting our policy to review. Chair, that we take. And then on the conditions, Chair, and just to be quick on that one, from our side, what we have done working both with the IDC and the NEF is increasingly funding them to ensure that they are able to relax the conditions. So just funding the gap for the conditions to be relaxed. So that the issue of making sure that longer time frames are allowed, particularly for Black industrialists in relation to working capital and all of those things that I mentioned in the policy, that those are achieved, and lowering the cost. You'd see in the programs such as our manufacturing enhancement program that we even set an interest rate limit that all the industrialists will be subjected to for the purposes of working capital. What you will hear from the IDC is that there are limitations with these things because they have to raise funding. They haven't been capitalized. So we're trying to see how we can work with them that within their limitations, they are still in a way compelled to adhere to the policy in terms of relaxing of the conditions and the price at which the different industrialists receive support. And then, Chair, I'll leave the rest to the colleagues. Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's start with Ms. Bate and then Mwate. I'm trying to look for the name, whether it's a C or E.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ray. Just to clarify on the pricing, I just did want to set the pricing isn't as concessional as the DTIC blended finance that they provide to us at the fixed rate that Mr. Becky Thompson was referring to. So our pricing is higher than that because of our base pricing, but as I said, we do provide a discount. The Black industrialist discount is up to 1.5% reduction on the interest rates for the Black industrialists. Typically, we do accept a lower contribution from the Black industrialists, and lower security. So they typically would not, in this category, be qualifying for bank funding. So it's not a direct comparison to would our funding be cheaper than or more expensive than the banks. The bank funding, unfortunately, is not available for many of these entities. We also provide long tenor funding, so working capital can be up to 5 years and the plant and equipment can be up to 7 years. So we do look at those longer tenors. We do also in new business enterprises, so startups or greenfield operations, we'll provide extended moratoria in order to provide support in that startup phase. So there's a number of concessions that we offer to the businesses over and above the pricing concessions. And from a failure rates perspective, we did an analysis last year, and what we've seen is, and this was post-COVID, what we did see is that the Black industrialist book has performed very much in line with our normal portfolio. So we are seeing that there are good successes that are coming out of the Black industrialist funding that we provided to date. Thank you, Honourable Ray.
Maybe while you're still there, Ms. Bates, maybe the issue of a particular person that I referred to the PLO and then PLO referred him to you, I think it had to do with your condition of an uptake agreement with the FMCG. So that you can get funding from the IDC. I don't know if you can respond to that, if you perhaps...
Yes, very much. Thank you. Our objective in providing funding is to ensure that the businesses have the best opportunity of success. One of the key headwinds and challenges facing Black startups, well, many startups and Black industries particularly, is the lack of access to equity. If we have debt that has, even if we provide that moratorium, and similarly with the manufacturing competitiveness scheme, the loans do roll up. So you're wanting to be sure that there aren't unnecessary delays in the startup of the venture and the access to markets. Otherwise, the venture has very limited opportunity of success because of the equity buffer not being there to absorb the risk in the business. So we typically do look to find some level of technical or marketing support, particularly in a highly competitive traded environment. It need not be a firm offtake, but there needs to be an intent for a purchaser to purchase. There was a wonderful quote made, I think, during the investment conference or prior to that small businesses don't fail because of a lack of access to capital. They fail because of a lack of access to markets. And that's where we really do look to ensure that the Black industrialist who is also putting money into the venture, you know, it is a means test, but there's the Black industrialist capital that's also at risk. And we really do want to ensure that that capital is not unnecessarily risked, and that they have the best opportunities of building a successful business. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the responses. Back to you, Acting DG, for final remarks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Chair, from our side, Chair, I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank the members of the Select Committee for the very robust questions that they've put forward this morning. Chair, I think those questions only help for the department and the DTIC family to strengthen the program. And Chair, we look forward to continuously engage the Select Committee on the work of the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity to thank you, Mr. Khan, the leader of the delegation, the DDGs that are here. The chairperson of the board of IDC, the leadership of IDC administratively of the NEF. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to the honorable members, the staff of the committee and the staff of parliament generally, the media, PMG. Thank you very much for attending and also for your participation. We've been meeting the IT, Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, I think for the last 4 weeks, almost every Tuesday. Next week we'll be now giving you a break. We'll be meeting with the Department of Tourism. But we'll meet you again now on the 2nd of August, because the whole of July will be on constituency period. You will be the first again when we come back on the 2nd of August. Our focus will be on your program two. We also hope that Bulgarian leadership will also be part of the meeting on the 2nd, if Chulu can. I'm sure you will get the program of the committee the 2nd of August when we come back from the constituent leave. We will be meeting with you again. Otherwise, thank you very much for your attendance and participation and also responses to questions. Thank you so much. Honorable members, we come to the end of our meeting. Also have only 1 minute to connect to another meeting. That's it. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you so much.
Chair.
Thank you.